Rashi Murphy. Nice to talk with you today in Strasbourg. Let's talk a little bit about the past. Maybe you are on stage since 20 years, is this right? So it's a long time on stage. You have been quite young at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You started with...
I was only six when I started. I was six years old.
Started with music.
20 years ago.
Okay, I see.
It was a long time. I'm doing it a long time. Mm-hmm. I should know better, but I don't.
Why know better?
I should have grown up by now as an artist, but I don't think I'm still quite a child as a performer, I think. I feel like a child making records. I feel like it's still amazing that somebody like me can make records, can go on stage. Somebody's not, I have no musical background. And it really did. I became into music accidentally. My intro to music was much more about the love affair I was having than a career situation.
So it was with Mark Bryden, and he was a musician already that time?
He was a proper producer. Yeah, he'd made records. Okay. And he's a bass player, musician.
Okay. And then you met, you became a couple, a love couple. Mm-hmm. And then you decided to do this Moloko thing. And that time, it was beginning or middle of the 90s, there was this trip-hop thing. So it was a quite nice accident that you founded Moloko at that time and made this kind of music at that time. So you became a kind of pop star quite quickly. How was it for you, and how is it if you look back now?
Well, I mean, I didn't become a pop star quickly at all, I don't think, because I think the first hit we had was a few years after we started
Sing It Back.
So I didn't feel like I became a pop star straight away. And when we made the first record, Do You Like My Tight Sweater, there was no trip-hop when we made the record. It was only after we made the record that the word trip-hop, after we put out the record, or during the time that we put the record out, the phrase trip-hop started to come around for people like us, people like Portishead first. And then it was like a second wave of like more Chibas and... Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, lots of other bands that came after, but...
Tricky.
Tricky came out of... Yeah, he was called Trip Hop, but he came straight out of Massive Attack, so that was kind of prefigured all of it. That was all before everything, Massive Attack, I suppose. But you couldn't call them a Trip Hop band, you know. So it was a kind of a strange phrase, trip hop. It did have bad connotations. It seemed very flippant, to kind of change hip hop, the phrase hip hop into trip hop. It did seem a bit like a step down, or I don't know. It just was it wasn't a very good name, for a type of music, I don't think. So that was kind of difficult for us, It was awkward. There was a lot of awkwardness at the beginning of Moloko.
So it was a kind of invention of journalists, this term, trip-hop?
Yes, I think so, okay, yeah.
Like in Germany, the Hamburger Schule.
I think it was just trying to figure out what people were doing with electronic music, because, we'd been doing four-on-the-floor dance music, house music had become very successful and felt like it had gone as far, almost felt like it to us that it had gone as far as it was going to go. It was starting to repeat itself even then, and so stupidly, I think probably we thought that its glory days were behind, were gone, we both had loved house music, but I think we were a bit sick of it by 94, both of us, and so many other people as well. So I think this kind of surge of what can we do with samplers? What can we do with the technology? What can we do with the new ways of making music? Can we build our own studios? What sort of style should we mash up? And I think what got called trip hop was many, many things, many different experiments that were going on at the time.
But it was not a larger idea behind this trip hop, something political, for example,
like punk or anything like that. No, I think it was just we've got these tools. Let's not repeat ourselves. How can we mash these things up? What happens if we collide these ideas? You know, many people were just beginning to experiment in a certain way with things that had gone before. So, yes, I mean, it was a natural sort of movement. It was a very bad name to give it, trip-hop, because it sounds flippant. It doesn't sound big, you know. It sounds like a diminutive of hip-hop, which was really not at all what any of us were about, as far as I can figure out.
On stage, you are seen as a diva. Do you see yourself as a diva? And what is a diva? What does a diva represent for you in your eyes?
No, I don't really see myself as a diva, but if you want me to be, I'm happy, I'm fine with that.
You like to be seen as a diva?
Not. I don't go out of my way to be a diva, no. Without wanting to sound, you know, moody about it, I'd like to be seen as an artist, you know. I mean, I wanted to be an artist when I was a child. I thought I was going to be a visual artist. I accidentally became something in music, and I've tried to manipulate it at all times to accommodate that drive in me to be an artist. You know, I've wanted to be an artist, and so I use the thing that I've fallen into, you know, in that way. And that's kind of what I'd like to be known as. But a diva, it can be positive, it can be negative. Of course, if I was a man, I wouldn't be called a diva ever. So that is a bit slightly annoying, and yes.
Yeah, maybe it's automatically, if a woman is a bit extroverted and is interested in fashion, and then there, yeah, you've got this picture of a diva in your mind.
I'm interested in everything, you know. I'm not just interested in fashion. I'm interested in every, you know, as you see, I came straight from here. I was looking for modernist, brutalist architecture in Strasbourg today.
But people don't know that. So they just see you on stage and on pictures and your voice, and then they have their imagination.
Yeah, I think people make many presumptions about female artists that they would not make about male artists. But, you know, that's how it is. But I like it. I like everything. I like architecture. I like fashion. I like art. I like science. I like to have a little think about science, a little think about philosophy. You know, I mean, I do enjoy the world as much as I can.
I've read that especially gay people adore you, so that was new for me. But it fits quite well to this diva thing, you know, because, yeah, it's kind of representation of strong femininity and, I don't know, makeup and fashion. It's, again, a cliche maybe about gay people, but that would make a bit sense for me why you fit so well together. And at the same time, you said you are both genders on stage or as an artist, so this is the queer thing about this, about you. Like a queer utopia or so, like a fembot, so you mix everything together, and maybe this is the fascinating thing for queer people.
It looks like recently, actually, to me, that everything is getting mixed up more and more and more, and I think we're kind of almost in a new era, like the 60s, where lots of big things are being torn down, lots of sort of gender barriers are being torn down, sexuality barriers. People are really not putting up with it anymore on lots of levels. So, you know, I think that it's a real cliche, but, you know, these labels are becoming less relevant. Maybe they're becoming extinct. You know, people are really not accepting these labels like they used to. And then there's this aspect of being an outsider, and I think that appeals. There's a connection there. An outsider, and not only an outsider, but a defiant outsider stance. That's, I think, what I stand for, you know, without wanting to label it too much.
Your stage shows also quite extravagant. if I may say so. You once said that's quite tiring and hard to do so over the years. So did you change your show in general in the last years, or are you still this?
Yeah, I cannot help it, but I've tried to hold it down, but I can't. I find myself being very physical. But I'm still in a good physical condition, so it's not so bad. Maybe in a few years it's going to get harder, but yeah, it's still quite a physical show.
Yeah, but you have two children, so what shall come?
I'm not dead yet. I'm not dead yet. I've got plenty of energy for the shows.
Yeah. And you do some sports and maybe yoga before the show. A lot of artists do so.
Do a bit of sports, try to keep myself as fit as I can. But like I said today, even though I look very sporty, what I was actually doing was walking around the city looking for
architecture. With your running shoes.
So. In my running shoes, so I could run when I needed to. Because I do it all on foot, but I've been very much enjoying that, going around cities and photographing cities when I'm in a new place, yeah. It's exercise and art at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Is it also a source of creativity, maybe?
It's irrelevant, really, to what I do, but it's every kind of creative endeavour creates more creative energy. You know, everything that... You know, when I... If you read a book, it helps you make a picture. You know, it's sort of, even when they're not connected, the more of it that you do, it's kind of... I do believe it's, you know, it just keeps creating itself, creativity. So I'm always happiest when I'm kind of obsessively doing something creative.
In another interview, you said that this extravagance is kind of armament for you and you need this mask or different masks to tell the truth. What do you mean that? And I mean, it's a kind of contradiction, isn't it? But it's nice.
Well, I think you either are a truthful performer or you're not, and it doesn't really matter whether you're dressed up, you're dressed down, left, right, centre. You know, it's you either are truthful or you're not, and I feel that is, you know, nobody in their right mind could question the truth of my performances or actually me, because I'm actually a very truthful person, I think. That's the sort of thing liars say, isn't it? But, no, you know, I endeavour to be an honest individual, so I can't see how I could mask that in the performance. There's nothing that I could use. These are all tools just to... express their expression. It's expressionism, you know, what I do. And if it doesn't tell you something real, I'm not interested in it. But it might be a mask, but it can tell you something that I can't tell you in any other way, you know. So I use masks, but I think forcing my personality through the mask makes it even stronger. Forcing the truth out through it makes it even more powerful, a kind of energy, than kind of standing there and putting on the clothes of truth, you know, the jeans and the t-shirt. That's can be a mask as well.
Yeah, but what kind of truth should this be? I mean, it's
how you feel in the moment, yeah. You know. I mean, so I try to allow for the possibility that I may one day feel it is really truthful of me to walk on in this, you know, and I might do that in my jogging clothes, you know. I might just walk on with no makeup one day in the clothes that I'm sitting here talking to you, you know. But I'm not ready to do that tonight, and I don't need to do it. I mean, it's just as honest what I do anyway.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain. I know it's full of contradictions, but it should be, you know, like...
People are... You want to say, human beings are full of contradictions.
Yes, and you want to say something quickly, complicate. Is something complicated? Quickly. Performance is an ideal mode for that.
Where comes your passion for classic Italian pop songs from? You did this EP, Mi Senti?
Well,
Don't tell me your husband.
My partner's Italian and he's a music producer. And I met him in the studio, made music with him and his partner, Lucas Ian Brigante. And so it was almost like a love letter to him, the Mi Senti project. And it was a lovely thing to do with him. And it was something that he could really teach me about. And I just very much enjoyed it, and it was really just an educational jaunt for me, and I learned a lot doing it. I mean, it pushed my voice, doing those cover versions of singers like Mina, you know, that really took my voice into places it hasn't been before, and I learned a lot about that kind of songwriting and that kind of, their kind of presentation of themselves and the wit that's sort of at the heart of those, that music and those songs are very sophisticated and very witty and very clever, really. And it's just was a very interesting project for me.
Do you speak Italian?
A little bit.
Okay.
That was part of me learning Italian. Doing those songs really helped. But yeah, I'm around a lot of Italians. I hear it and I can understand it, but speaking it I'm a bit more nervous.
Yeah, Hairless Toy is your latest record. Finally we get there. May I ask a question?
Yeah.
You wouldn't describe it as pop, you said, but as disco.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's on your website, there's the last line, it's definitely not pop.
Oh, no, I don't describe it as pop. It's really funny, I'm getting called pop a lot lately. Art pop, people are calling me art pop, which I quite like.
House pop.
I quite like that.
Soul,
you know.
Pop.
But I didn't try to make pop at all on this record, but still people do see it as some kind of pop, art pop, adjutant pop, pop that, you know, is at the corners of pop. We didn't have anything in mind. With this one, myself and Eddie Stevens, who I've known for near on 20 years and worked with all in the live music and everything, we didn't really need to talk about what we were doing. We know each other very, very well, and we didn't really have an agenda. We just let it come out. But I think it's an experiment. It's like everything else I've done. It's like, oh, what happens when you put this and this together, you know?
But would you say it is disco more than pop?
I think there are traces of the disco in it, yes.
But not in the Bee Gees way, but in, I don't know, the house
well,
and dancing
not in the
way.
No, definitely not in the Bee Gees way. Disco is a big word, though, you know, yeah. It really covers a lot. I mean, in New York, when I went there the first time, I was quite bemused to see that many of the people in the house, what I would call house scene, call that music disco. You know, they call the house records disco records. So disco's a big thing, really. It's much bigger than I think people are beginning to really understand the breadth of the influence of disco.
Yeah, the lyrics on Hairless Toys are not poppy at all. They are quite serious, reflected, soulful maybe even. And you are... you wrote the lyrics, I guess? Only you? Mm-hmm. How does this... Yeah. Content come from and inspiration for the lyrics?
Well, we would sit down and make tracks from scratch, and as he was working on beats and keyboard parts and stuff, I would be working on lyrics, and we worked very fast. I have lots of methods that I use. I sometimes write down my dreams. I sometimes write down things that I hear people say. I make big scrapbooks of cutouts from newspapers and books and things. I collect ideas as I go along. I do much more collecting when I'm close to having to record something. But yeah, generally, do collect things, ideas for songs. And then I just surround myself with all that material in the studio, and usually something can come from it.
And your songs are the collage? The collages?
Not always. Collages? Sometimes, though. Sometimes I work from those collages and that I make. But very rarely would I make a song that is a collage. I might just flick through these things that I make that I think they look nice, you know, as well as anything else. And I might flick through those and just see one phrase, and it will create a whole song around the one phrase rather than kind of cut phrases up and then just sing all that. Right. Don't do that, really. Right. That proper, you know, old school cut-up technique. Mm. Done it once or twice, but not often.
I guess it's hard to describe what the record is about in general. I mean, I can see, of course, the love thing and pain and joy, but yeah, maybe this is in every record. Is there something between
there
the
is,
lines?
There
I haven't
is
seen?
A kind of a sense of, there is a song on there called Exile, and I think there is a sense that there's this person has been exiled and has kind of been away for a long time. There is that sense. It definitely feels like I've come out of those 8 years, you know, that there's been a build up and a bit of mystery. It comes out of some sort of mystery and out of some place in the past, some memory and some kind of exile, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Do one more question.
Okay, do one more question about one song, Exploitation. Yeah, quite the single, which I find quite cool. It's really housey and fancy. Exploitation, you said it's about sex. So my question would be, do you think sex is always a kind of exploitation? And you also sing who exploits who, so...
No, I don't think it's a kind of exploit. At the best of times, it's not an exploitation at all. But I think certainly not in that sense that you mean it. In a very literal sense, you're exploiting one another's pleasure. Yes, that's fine. Mm. What I mean is, I wrote it from the standpoint of a person who is being ironic and witty and wry and sexy and funny and all the things that I find sexy, intelligence I find very sexy, funniness I find very sexy, you know. So that's kind of the standpoint that I wrote it from. So in that sense, it's a very positive song, really. It's just a fun, sexy, clever song. But I knew that, of course, you can read all these big things into it as well. I find that funny, you know, that you can think about me being exploited in the music industry, sexual exploitations, feminist ideals, you know. I love those lyrics that have everything in them. And when they have everything in them, that's when I say, okay, I'm going to really pinpoint why I'm writing the song, you know, where I'm writing the song from. And the pinpoint in that was sex.
But the video clip is a bit sad, isn't it? I mean, there's this woman and always trained, and there's also kind of codependence.
It's a camp video. Also, and you know, in the end, I directed that video, so she's fallen apart, but I directed myself falling apart. Okay. Who exploited who? I don't know.
Thank you, Roisin.